Welcome back, my friends, to the Sweet Spot, where IT leaders share the insight with other leaders and others that want to lead. My name is Carlos Vargas, and as every week, I have my two co-hosts, Howard Holden and Paul Lewis. So we are all probably somewhere. No, Paul is still at home.
I'm at home.
So,
fine.
Yeah, Paul's not at home.
Paul's not at home at all. He travels with that terrible wallpaper everywhere he goes.
I keep that roll of it in my bag.
It's a rolling background.
Yeah, he keeps a roll of his grandmother's wallpaper in his bag that he puts up in every hotel room, and then the rolling background is that little bookcase that's behind his head.
I've been here slightly over 22 years, and this wallpaper has yet to change.
That wallpaper would have changed for me like the first weekend. Oh, honey, I don't know what happened. There's a huge scratch on the wallpaper, I guess. It's got to go.
It seems like a lot of effort. I don't have to move the books. It seems
the books.
So you might disrupt the coffee maker behind you and never get the settings right again.
The annoying part is I actually redid these floors, let's say 2 years ago, and I had to take everything out for that to work. That probably was the time I should have done it.
Yeah, you think? Yeah. Like, what I'm surprised about is you got a workman in to redo the floors, and the workman didn't say, look, I refuse to work in here another day. This is making me dizzy.
Maybe that's why they did it so fast. They were in and out in an hour.
Oh, wow.
So I was watching the new Dune movie. Yes. And there's a scene in it that that kind of sticks with me, right? Sand walking is an important piece of survival on the desert of Arrakis. And for those who don't know, the desert of Arrakis, or Dune, has the great enemy of the people, which is the sandworms. The sandworms move below the surface, and they're attracted to noise, and especially any kind of repetitive noise. And we tend to walk in a repetitive fashion. And so the Fremen, or the natives of Arrakis, have learned to walk in a way that doesn't create a consistent pattern. Yeah. So Chani is trying to teach Paul Atreides, right? You can tell from the way their names are pronounced that they come from different cultures,
right?
How to sand walk. And so she's sand walking. She goes, you do a terrible job of it. And she shows him, and he goes, well, that's not really accurate. I have watched all the anthropological videos created. And she just kind of looks at him, right? Like I've done this since I could first walk, and I am still alive. Therefore, my method works versus the anthropologists that study us from afar and frequently die.
Right.
And he just kind of pauses, and he goes, oh, right. All of that was conveyed in a look, right? So he just kind of went, oh, right. I guess I should pay attention.
So he's well
read. I find the same thing happens in our business a bit, and a bit too often. Is it just me?
Do we think it's happening more now than it has in the past?
Absolutely. It's happening more now than it has in the past.
I 100% agree. In fact, I hear it almost every one-on-one and roundtable conversation with CIOs, where in the past, they would have sort of received the deference, right? They would have said, I don't really know anything about IT, and I'm talking about the other executives. Can you just go figure out if this works, right? The blinking lights in the data center, the red, green, yellow project. They didn't really understand how to build or operate or maintain IT. But now these executives seemingly have more information, at least information to which they've read, or sort of consumer ChatGPT kind of information, seeing how it is easy to apply and wondering and pushing back on the CIO and CTO and saying, it seems very simple. Why aren't you doing this quicker than what you're actually doing? And this pushback to the CIO is uncomfortable. I'm not sure what the appropriate word there to push back on. But from a CIO's perspective, it's hard to push back on the business because the business arguably is more important than the CIO from the business perspective, but still have to push back and say, it's not as easy as what you think. And not only do I have to help re-educate you on the technology, I have to help re-educate you on the implementation of technology, which seems like a lot of effort.
I think that's a problem that I see over and over again, and I think it's also a problem of interpretation, right? When oftentimes one side of the table will have far less expertise than the other, and yet shows itself as though it has the expertise on their side of the table. You know what I mean? Like they're the owner and the origin of that expertise. And I think oftentimes we're passive aggressive in how we accept that. And I think it allows us to misaccept that. I think people try to connect with people through shared experiences. Sometimes those shared experiences come from, hey, I read a thing to learn more about you. And oftentimes we just kind of go, oh, well, we'll be quiet and you're wrong. And we get dismissive. When in fact, what we should say is, well, I appreciate where you're coming from and I appreciate that you took the time to learn about it. This is where I play. And I'm in the room because I am the expert in that area. I am the expert in that space. I'm the expert in that thing.
Right.
And so let's, now that we know we have a common language, let's move forward and let me be the expert here and you be the expert there. And I think too often we allow that to go a different direction to our detriment, right? I have the same complaint about vendors. If I bring you in the room, my expectation is you're an expert at what you do and I'm an expert at what we do. And if you're not going to be an expert in the room, you're not adding value in the room. So why are you in the room?
Right. You have to have a mastery over me in that situation.
Can it be that now that other executive understand the actual problem better than the technology executive because they have taken the time to at least understand it, the problem or dig a little bit deeper when the other one have just, okay, the technical guys know what to do. So he doesn't have probably a deeper understanding of how to do it.
Yeah, I like the good news in the situation is that they are reasonably read up on the technology topic and therefore are thinking much more about its application versus its implementation, right? So they're thinking about use cases of implementing Gen AI. They're thinking about the appropriateness of changing the customer journey to some sort of digital format. They're thinking about, you know, finding new customer segments that are more interested in smaller package products versus bigger package products. And therefore insights are more important than feature as an example. So all of those are good things, but I think the consumerization or the commoditization of technology is making them believe that it's a simple implementation. I think that's where the distinction is between application and implementation, where there are many use cases we can implement, even potentially quickly, even potentially they could do themselves, but it's not without risk. And it's not without the, we'll call it the production or enterprise guardrails that are necessary in some of these technologies, which I think they miss. And maybe it requires re-education or just requires education.
But I also think you have the problem, especially when these are new topics, when these are nascent areas, where oftentimes the CIO is also not staying up to snuff on these topics and therefore isn't the expert in the room and doesn't have the expertise necessary, right? And so that's a problem. Like if you find yourself in the room where you're talking about technology and your CIO and your CTO are not the experts in the room from a leadership standpoint, you probably need a new CIO or new CTO. Like I think we're beyond the point of saying your CIO and your CTO can remain in the back of the bus while your company attempts to become more and more and more technology dependent and more and more of a technology company, right? And so while I always appreciate those conversations because I love it when the business has learned enough about technology to start aligning what they do and say, hey, can we do this? We'd really like to do this. Is this possible? Is this feasible? Right? What does it take to get there? Because I never have a problem coming back and saying, well, the reasonability around this is this, the path to value is here, the cost to get here is going to be too high, and instead we do this, right? Being that expert in the room. And I find that gives us these common talking points. But I will say that doesn't hold true universally within our space. And there are a lot of CIOs and CTOs, the last time they looked at technology was when they were in college.
Yeah, that's a very important point. That it, and time and time again, I hear from CIOs and CTOs, and even myself, where technology is changing so quickly now that it's even hard to keep up. Right? If you take Gen AI, just AI specifically, new tools, new technologies, new vendors, new methods, new foundational models, new implementation techniques, daily. Right? New GPU, sure. Daily. And as much as I can read, it doesn't necessarily create a mastery in the subject when next week is a whole different chapter available to me.
I mean, I disagree.
Disagree.
Just to be honest, right? Like, yeah, because the job of the CIO and the CTO is to be the lead technologist in the room. right? So the fact is, if the business knows more about the technology than you do, you're just failing, right? And so all the excuses are just that. They're just excuses,
right?
At the very least, have an HBR subscription. Read what HBR writes. Just skim the crap that doesn't have technology in it. But know for sure that if it has technology in it, your board and your and the rest of the executive team are going to ask you about it. And so you should be fairly well read up on it. You should know kind of the big 10, right? What are the pitfalls? What are the advantages? What are the paths to success? What are the recent failures? What are the things to do and what are the things to watch out for? Like, it's not, you don't have to have super depth, but being around technology for so long, like, we do this every day, all day long.
Yeah. I guess I can buy the what, but I can't buy the how. So 100%, I agree with you. The what needs to be known. I need to know what's happening at all times, consuming content 2 hours a day. Exactly. What I think is much more difficult is to appreciate the how I'm going to implement that, given the implementation of those technologies also changes quickly. And it requires skill set beyond the CIO, or at least more detailed than you'd expect of the CIO.
I can kind of agree with that. But you should have directionality down, right? So based on, we'll use Gen AI, right? So, okay, cool. The board wants us to have a Gen AI story. We need to have a strategy. They want to see us involved in implementation, right? You should be able to talk through, okay, so my job is to manage risk and drive the technology strategy for the company. You should have an answer for that, right? And part of that is the high level how. Mm-hmm. Right. How will we go about it? Well, this is nascent technology. We don't have people on staff that are ready to do this. Our data quality is generally poor across the board, but we probably have these two or three silos where we have some pretty good data. So I'd recommend starting there. We have these four partners that are kind of our key partners. Only one of them has a promising Gen AI practice. So we've already, by this point, you should have already had them in and already talked to them to have some idea of what they're capable of and kind of have a story. Right. The fact that we're still hearing this from CIOs makes me realize they've done none of those things. And it's kind of unforgivable, if I'm being honest. Right. Like this is, it was November of 2022 that this launched. Like, it's been a year and a half. You don't have the ability. It's the fastest growing technology ever. Ask your 11-year-old about Gen AI if you're that confused. Like, you should have a talking point at this point. It's been more than a year. I'm with you.
I can agree with you philosophically, but at the exact same time, I'm asked to do two podcasts of recent on what the limitations of AI in the software engineering practice might be by a team of software engineers and their leaders, and have conversations with a bunch of CIOs and CTOs or just technology leaders about use cases when they're ill-prepared on what the actual technology looks like and how it's implemented. So even to this day, I'm having way more 101 conversations than I would expect to have.
Yeah, so am I. I'm in a tremendous amount of 101 conversations.
What's the root cause of that? Like, if we think it shouldn't be true, what's preventing these executives from?
Well, we still have way too many stage one executives, right? Where they're really focused on the bottom line conversation and not the business value conversation.
Right.
That's the problem. The problem is we have organizations that have paid CIOs and paid CTOs for so long to focus on managing spreadsheets.
Right.
And not leading technology value within the organization, that the organization has set themselves up for failure. And these CIOs and CTOs have just kind of gone along. Like, the writing's been on the wall for a long time, and yet we still have the same conversations over and over again.
Right.
We have these same conversations because nobody wants to have the hard conversation, which is we're not really performing the way we need to perform. We're not driving the value to the business the way we want to. And everyone is scared of having that larger conversation because where do you draw the line?
You're both at content conferences this week. How heavy is it focused on innovative technologies right now?
I'm at KubeCon, so it tends to be really bleeding edge.
Sorry, which con are you at?
KubeCon?
KubeCon, got it. Okay. I just didn't know the first con
in Paris, so KubeCon.
Right. So is it, do you hear a lot of yes, AI, but what else? Other containerization, other
platform
engineering type project initiatives?
Yeah, platform engineering is probably the number two or number three piece of the conversation. We're seeing a lot more kind of security talk here than we have in the past.
Like DevSecOps, you know, or Zero Trust?
No, DevSecOps.
Okay.
Right, shift left would be the term. Right. I'm not seeing DevSecOps, but that's what they're talking about. I am seeing a lot of shift left.
Right.
Right. Overall, it's interesting, but it's also the feedback that I get from all the vendors that I met with is the number of customers that they talk to that have still done nothing with containers, that have done nothing with Kubernetes, is very, very high.
Hmm.
Right. You know, at the same time, if they've already gone down the path and they've got a relatively high level of maturity, they're not calling on them.
Right.
Right? They're not taking meeting with those vendors because they've got to figure it out. So, you know, in the 20 million organizations that exist worldwide, it's reasonable to assume that, you know, some percentage of them have got it figured out and some don't. And just, you know, the same thing like we talk about, right? The people that show up to a talk on AI 101 are exactly the people that, you know, show up to a talk on AI 101, they haven't got it figured out. And we don't hear from those that haven't figured out.
Carlos, how about on your side? Is there
so it's interesting. There's some about how to leverage AR or VR for different use cases, how Gen AI may help. But like how I mentioned, there's a lot of people that understand the basics, and there are people that have figured it out. The ones that figure out are the ones that are delivering the talks. And I think that the challenge is that these guys that figure out, they have a level of mastery across a lot of different areas. Mm. And these ones have not figured out how to even master the basics. So it's, we need to figure out a way to help the organizations to how to meet in the middle. How do you start the journey to start learning a little bit? So you can do, like you said, the conversation. I was thinking when you guys mentioned the executive doesn't understand, how about going to their team? And I remember that in other organizations that the three of us worked together, there were things that say, I think that this may be something that we should focus on the future. Let's go and try to figure it out and see if this pains something, if there's some value in this.
Right.
And I think that we
build a POV on that.
Yeah, build a POV. So I think that it's interesting because people stop me and say, okay, I want to know more about what you're doing for Gen AI and the trainings and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, have you even opened something on ChatGPT or in any of the other platforms?
Yeah.
And some of them say, yeah, some of them, okay, but I don't understand how can I make it? And they give me a use case. I was like, okay, you already started looking a little bit about it. Here's a way to go. But when you guys were talking about, do you see that the executive are too disconnected to their people to at least ask them to, okay, you take 2 hours a week and look at this new technology that we may be looking at it down the road? Because like you said, Gen AI came about a year and a half ago, and if their people and themselves don't know anything about it, or they cannot even try a POV, is there a disconnect between the ranks?
You were close to making the point that I wanted to make by asking the question. I have three conferences coming up, three technology conferences. I wouldn't necessarily call them hardcore technology conferences, but there's going to be a lot of practical content over the 3-4 days period of time. In my conversations with my peers across, even just in the Toronto region, it is odd to me that the vast majority of them are not attending. In fact, I would have assumed what would be more appropriate, especially in 2024, is that they went to these conferences for the purpose of understanding the technology, its application, and its implementation. But they're avoiding these conferences because they either fear the detail or believe that it's more appropriate to have less implementation knowledge I'm not sure which, or a third option. And I'm seeing that as a trend that is unhealthy in our world.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of avoidance. I'm seeing a lot of topic avoidance. I'm seeing a lot of AI is going to replace my job. Therefore, I'll just stick my head in the sand and right. it'll go away on its own. Right, which obviously couldn't be more untrue. You know, I'm a pretty staunch supporter of it. I believe the Pandora's box is open. This will be the interface of the future.
Yeah.
Right. And anytime something new shows up, my attitude is always, you know, take advantage of it and learn it.
Right.
Right? The early adopters of these things that become ever present and you know, always available, end up being the kind of stars of the show, right? They end up making the money, they end up getting the gigs, they end up, you know, coming out on top. And what's interesting to me is I see the same people that always complain that they're left behind, purposely putting themselves in situations to be left behind.
Right.
Right.
Is it a fear of not understanding that they're going to go into these sessions and not appreciate it, when I'd argue that there's always a nugget? Like, I go into many sessions to it I don't have a mastery of and probably don't expect me to understand everything, but I'll come away with something, a few things.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Right. I mean, the challenge often is there, you're so worried about not being in tune with 100% that you leave the 10% on the floor too.
Right.
Right. And you just have to get over it. You absolutely have to put yourself in the room. Just hearing the same terms over and over again should give you enough that you can leave and Google the term. Or in this case, ask ChatGPT to explain it.
Right.
Right. That's the beauty of the technology.
Right? And the best part of a conference is you're in a session with, you know, a couple hundred people. They don't know you. You don't know them. Your ignorance is bliss in that circumstance, right? It doesn't matter. Nobody's judging you in that room. You're not the one for that.
The bliss is there's no test to come in or come out.
Right.
Right. No, they're not doing a quiz at the end of the session and I'm sorry. We now need to know your title and your company. We're going to inform them that you passed, that you failed the quiz. Nobody asks.
There's no downside, right? Which is the weird part. And yet there's avoidance.
Right. Right. And the downside is that your board and your executive team are going to catch you completely unawares. And at some point they're going to go, why is this guy here? Like, why is this the leader? Like there has to be a better option, because our peers, like when I'm talking to my peer, they're not being left behind. They're 4 steps, 5 steps, 6 steps ahead of us. Right. How are we so left behind so consistently? And the worst case is they go around you. They implement the technology poorly, it makes the news, and then you're once again on the chopping block, right? You should have known better. You should have known the risks involved. Not you should have said no. You should have known the risks involved and helped us navigate around the risks, because saying no is not the option anymore.
I'm glad you brought that up, because especially as a sort of services provider, when we engage CFOs, CMOs, COOs, CROs, more often than not, they're asking us to be their IT shop because they have little faith in their own IT shop. Some of it's red tape. I get that. Some of it is just there's no budget for the things they want to do. And yet this particular department has additional budget to implement it. But a lot of it is they simply don't trust that they have the knowledge to implement it in a reasonable way, that they're old school IT.
Yeah, that they're just going to say no. I'm tired of them saying no. I have to do this. My competition's doing it. I'm tired of them saying no.
Right.
So I'm going to hire someone and pay them to say yes.
Right.
Right. How long do we expect that to last before you just replace them? Right. Like, if every time you tried to dial out on your cell phone, 1 in 5 times it said no, how long would you keep the cell phone?
Right.
Right. If 1 in 5 times your car failed to start and you had a budget for a car, and yet within that budget, you got nothing for it, right? Like, it's not a fully owned car. It doesn't have no maintenance. How long would you keep the car before you're like, okay, like I get that, you know, I only drive 10,000 miles every 3 years. And so my maintenance is pretty low, but 1 in 5 times, it just doesn't work. And you know, one in five trips it randomly turns off while I'm driving down the road, how long are you gonna keep that car? And yet we run IT too often delivering that as a response back to our customer. Right. How long? And then we're surprised. Oh, wow, my CEO is asking me to outsource the entire IT team. Ooh, I wonder how that happened.
Right.
Right.
You think that's the root cause of also like the big SI play? Big SI play comes in and says, you know, I'm going to take all of your IT because you're 100%. Clearly not effective. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Right. And it's really easy to do it because you're like, oh, well, you're going to get worse support. No, we don't think so. We're pretty dissatisfied with the support we're getting now.
Right. Even if I'm slightly more dissatisfied, I won't know the difference.
Well, plus, like you can also take the attitude of if I'm more dissatisfied, well, they don't know me. It's anonymous. And so I also don't ever have to wonder why it's poor.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like every day I go, these guys are part of the team and yet refuse to be part of the team. They're part of the business yet refuse to work for the business. They're part of the business and yet refuse to see us as their customer. At least the SI sees us as their customer, right? Yeah. At least they're as responsive as we pay them to be,
right?
And if I ratchet up the dollars, the response ratchets up with it, right? And yet when I had IT internally, I could never get them to do that. And oftentimes I think that's why we see that cyclical effect, right? Where IT gets outsourced, that lasts 3, 4, 5 years, and then they bring in somebody else to rebuild IT.
Right.
Because at least that way I can wipe out the attitude that was pervasive here before, or at least have an attempt at it. Right.
Right.
Like it's not, at some point we do it to ourselves. And that's my biggest concern, right? I don't want people going down the path of doing that to themselves, right? Of putting us themselves in the position of being redundant, of being replaced, of being simply sidelined. Right. And I see it constantly, and it does worry me, right? It worries me when I'm in a conversation about a new topic and IT's not present in the conversation. That's the biggest red flag in the world.
Right. If they don't show up in that conversation,
yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. You kind of want to nudge them and go, hey, like I just had this meeting. You probably should be aware. This is like everybody big was in this except you. You had no representation. Right. Like, it's not about shadow IT, buddy. It's about they don't respect you as IT. So to them, you're shadow IT.
It's funny. I envision this topic to be about discussing the lack of deference to IT over IT concerns. And we're kind of concluding with good. That's appropriate.
I mean, in some ways, right? If you find that that's what's happening to you, you probably need to think about what have I done to endear trust in my users, trust in my customer, and put the shoe on the other foot, right? If someone treated me that way and I had no trust in them, why would I be loyal?
Right.
Right.
Now, it's not entirely the technology executives, right? They have financial constraints, they have risk constraints, they have red tape that sometimes is pushed upon them. Like sometimes procurement makes it a nightmare to buy product, as an example.
I think a lot of that is an excuse to reinforce the behavior, though.
I see. Right?
Look, if the sales team has the budget, why are you still not a partner with the sales team? You can still be an advisor, even if you don't have budgetary control. Do you just have an attitude that if you don't have budgetary control, you won't be involved?
Also, good point.
Right. Like if procurement's a problem and the CEO wants it, procurement will stop being a problem.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? So like some of that I think is just excuses. Now I've absolutely been at organizations where procurement was the problem, but that's why I also say you have four vendors, you have five vendors. They're already through procurement.
Right.
Right.
Use
you
those.
Don't necessarily have to onboard somebody new. Use somebody you already have.
Right.
Right. You should at least be able to do that enough to find your way through the experimentation phase. Right. You might be able to go, hey, these guys aren't amazing enough that we're going to take our tier one application and integrate AI into it and publish it out to our customers.
Right.
Right. But you should at least have enough value there to be able to do something that adds trust to the business so that you can continue to be in those conversations while you work out the procurement thing on the bigger projects with a vendor that's more tightly integrated, or have them bring in a subcontractor. You know what I mean?
It's fair to say that
they're just not having the conversation.
It's fair to say that the CIO and CTO have created in themselves a chief company protector role when they probably shouldn't have, right? I as the CIO are going to make sure that our name doesn't get in the paper. I as the CIO will ensure that bad guys aren't going to find the data and threaten us with. Yeah.
Again, I think those are excuses, because if you set it up so that the other O's work around, the other chiefs work around you, you're not actually doing that job.
That's what I'm saying. That's the mistake they're making, is thinking that they could take on that role and it's appropriate.
Right. Well, they end up becoming the chief no officer. Nobody wants the chief no officer in the room.
Right.
Right. Every party has a pooper, and that pooper has a name, and his name is the CIO, is a problem inside of the room.
One could argue it's kind of shifted from CISO to CIO in that world, right? CIO is kind of less of a no now than they were in the past.
Well, what's funny is the CISO used to have to be the no, because they're like, no, not because I don't want to do it, because I have no budget to do it.
Right.
Right. They could be really honest about it. Like, no, this is a bad idea. We're not budgeted to solve this problem. And so you can't do things that we're not budgeted for. And the business did what the business did. But security has now shifted to the point where every business must be aware of it. It's a board level conversation. And now the CISO is happy to say, it's no problem. I'm happy to do that. This is the budget that I need. And they tend to get it.
Right.
It's much easier to get those funds now than it ever was in the past. Yeah, right. And great. So the CISO, I don't think the CISO ever had a strict no policy. I think the CISO had a real pragmatic view of the world of, I'd love to stop that threat. I'd love to enable that business. I don't have the money to do it. And therefore, no budget means no. And I don't think the CIO is actually doing that. I don't think the CTO is actually doing that, because they're not staying up on the education. The CISO is able to stay up on the education and thus really go redirect, right? And go, okay, well, in order to do that, here's all the things we need to do, not just no. But here's all the things we need to do, because these are how technology compensates for those risks. And if that was true, the CIO would be like, no. Like, we have an absolute strategy. We have an absolute plan. I know how to do it. We just have no budgetary approval in the 7 times I've asked for budget.
So it wasn't no, I won't. It was no, I can't.
Correct.
Yeah. And now that they have a separate budget, they report into the board that they have, the risks are far more obvious, right?
Yep.
71% of these companies are going to get a hit, right? That's a big number. That's pretty close to 100.
Yep. Yeah.
In fact, those are reported 71, which would suggest to me it's closer to 90. Right.
So with that you mentioned, will security maybe an area that can probably start reviewing GenAI? And how they can implement it to look at what the company will have to do with it. I'm not looking at just the implementation.
I mean, So security security isn't security, right? Security should be GRCF, governance, risk, compliance, and security, right? So we actually need to stop talking about it as just cyber, but really talk about it as risk, because that's what security is, right? Security is risk mitigation. And so security should be looking today, right now, at the risk contained within AI models, the risk contained within the data, and the risk contained within the inbound and outbound traffic of that data, right? How much data leakage are we going to have? How much IP leakage are we going to have? What is the PII risk, right? How do we make sure that we're well aware of and accept the risk of all of the data that we put in the system, because we're aware of all of the data we put in the system? Right. Security really needs to be on top of that today, right now. Right? Like, security should be looking at, what are my top 10 data sources, and where's all the risky data contained within that? Am I aware of it? Do I have it documented? Because those are the data sources that are likely to be used.
Right.
Right. How do I mitigate that? How do I make sure that I'm able to maintain compliance in an AI-driven world? The other side is, they really should also be looking at, how do I start leveraging Gen AI in intelligent ways to make my life easier? Right. Vendors are already looking at integrating these things into platforms. Just because they're integrating them doesn't mean they're doing a good job of it. And it is incumbent upon you, as you make choices, as you decide what platforms to stay with and what platforms to replace, to make sure that your AI strategy and their AI strategy has some alignment to it, and that you guys are on the same page in understanding what is a good use and what is a not good use for me. Because they're going to use AI regardless. And if it's not a good use, if it's a use that adds risk, and you continue down that path, you're adding that risk to your environment. Right. So I think there's a lot at play there. I think that's it's a really good question, Carlos.
So deference exists. Deference is good, and CIOs and CTOs have to step up their game. That's kind of the conclusion I'm coming.
Yeah, no, I think without a doubt, right? I think the time to be a digital first CIO was 5 years ago. And if you haven't done it, you're 5 years behind. So get in motion, right? Start building that momentum in yourself and in your teams, right? How many times, like, do you have a stand up with your team where you go, hey, let's talk good ideas, let's talk bad ideas, right? Let's talk things that are interesting. Really start working on that. And if you are that person, you're not seeing it in your organization, think about how you socialize that from yourself, right? Are you doing huddles? Are you doing all hands? Are you doing things to help socialize that out to your teams to kind of start making that part of the way you think and the way you talk and the way you work?
Right.
That'd be my advice anyway.
And to carve out time to learn, understand, read, apply, talk, point of view, repeat to others, present to executives, be present, all of those things you also have to do, which means you have to do less day-to-day operations, to which you should be empowering the rest of your team to do anyway.
For sure. And it's also a good opportunity too, to instead of going out and trying to find what is the source I can trust, you already have people that work for you that you trust.
Right.
Right. Turn to your leaders and go, hey, I want to learn more about this. Find the person that works for you that knows the most. I want three of them in my office next week. It's a great opportunity to take input from your team, increase that kind of that relationship, and likely change the way people think about the corner office. Right? Be more of a person. It's a win-win for absolutely everybody. You, your people, your organization, everything. So, you know.
And that might be the biggest gap. I know so many technology executives who their persona is based on knowing everything they need to know. And they'll show up to a round table having little to no knowledge and still thinking that the words they're saying are reasonable. They have to be way more humble in terms of the things they actually do or do not know and seek that input, seek that information.
100%. Well, I think we'll leave it at that, Carlos. I think that's a good place to end.
We're going to end it there. And I think that I will recommend to everyone that is looking at this episode today, or if you're looking at it a little bit later, some of the nuggets that I caught is today is Gen AI, but there will always be a new technology that is coming, a new implementation. Take the time, like we mentioned, there may be someone in your team that is looking at it because it's attractive to them. It was something interesting to them. Take time, learn from what they do. Hey, why are you using that? How do you think that we can leverage that? You'll be amazed how they're going to go, oh, I thought about these three different use cases that probably you have never thought that the company could implement. And now you have someone that could be the one that will help you to go through all this. So my friends, make sure that you share, you subscribe, and we'll see you in our next episode.